And so I have 3 audiobooks under my belt. And I didn't even know that was a possibility. And so they were like, oh, yeah, we're going to start auditioning people for With the Poet X. And I'm like, wait, audition? Like, for what? like, I'm right here.
From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a portrait of Elizabeth Acevedo, the slam poetry champion and breakout young adult author. Elizabeth Acevedo is a poet and award-winning author who is the daughter of Dominican immigrants. Her love of language and storytelling started in her parents' home in New York City, where she would hear them telling stories about her family's experience in the Dominican Republic. And as she got older, Elizabeth Acevedo was inspired to share her own experiences. Her debut young adult novel, The Poet X, reveals the struggles of a Dominican teenager, Xiomara, who's growing up in Harlem, New York City, and feels constrained by her religious mother. In it, Xiomara uses slam poetry to find her voice. The story resonated with young women around the country. But before Elizabeth Acevedo became a novelist, she performed slam poetry, much like her character, Xiomara.
My mother tells me to fix my hair.
Yes, yes.
And by fix, she means straighten. She means whiten. But how do you fix this?
Elizabeth's vibrant performances often highlighted the complexities of Afro-Latinidad and gained her the title of National Poetry Slam Champion in 2014. This May, Elizabeth released her second novel, With the Fire on High, about a young Afro-Latina who dreams of becoming a chef. Elizabeth Acevedo joins me in the studio to talk about her childhood, how storytelling became an important part of her life, and her latest work. Oh, and a heads up that this interview contains a curse word, which we've bleeped. Elizabeth Acevedo, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA.
Thank you so much for having me, Maria.
You have made your life into a life of words, both in poetry and in novel form. And I'm just wondering if you can take me to your life here in New York City. What are you identifying as? Are you like, I'm a young Dominican, I'm a New Yorker, hija de inmigrantes?
I don't think I had the language for intersections, right? I always knew that no one word felt right. But I think Dominican, and that would be my initial answer until I went to the Dominican Republic, right? And then I was the gringa cousin, and my Spanish wasn't quite perfect, and right. There were certain terms or artists I didn't know. And so I did kind of feel like in my neighborhood, I knew who I was, but I also knew that I was a little bit apart at times and never felt fully belonging in the spaces that I was in. But Dominican first, and then I think as I learned more history, as I got a better sense of my past, Afro-Dominican, and was really trying to reclaim a sense of Blackness that I felt like had been erased. And always New Yorker, right? Like, but when you're in New York, you don't have to say that. Everyone's from there.
So you like to say that you come from a family of storytellers. So what were the stories that you were hearing as a child? And were they all talked stories that you were hearing, or were some of those actually read to you?
Literature was big in my family. My father bought 2 newspapers every single day. My mother is always reading about like homeopathic remedies and the Bible, which was really big in my household. But most of the stories I heard, they were oral. My father doesn't talk a lot about his family or his past, but he always has a barbershop joke he wants to share that he always gets the timing perfectly for. My grandfather had a 3rd-grade education. He used to drive oxen in the Dominican Republic, so very much, you know, of the land, a campesino. But he knew these long riddles, 20, 30 minutes long, right? And he would just recite them off the top of his head without missing a beat. But it was really my mother who was the one who told stories. I didn't grow up with a lot of Disney. We had 2 Disney movies in the house. I didn't grow up watching a lot of what we consider fairy tales in this country. But my mother loved talking about where she was from. And so I learned the stories about when she rode a jaguar that she wasn't supposed to ride and fell off, and the jaguar ran off, and she knew that she was going to get in trouble with her father.
First, we need to say, because I know what a jaguar is. There may be a lot of people don't know what a jaguar is. So what is a jaguar?
Yeah, a mare. My grandfather had one single horse that my mother decided to ride one day, and it was a mess because she did not know how to ride it well, and it got spooked, and she fell off, and the jaguar left with what she was supposed to have picked up at the little colmado, and so she didn't take dinner, she lost the horse, and she fell and, like, hurt herself. So it was a hot mess, but it was these stories of a place I had never seen that my mother painted vividly and painted her adventures. And I think she took a lot from reciting those memories, but I don't know that she knew how much she instilled in me this love of stories.
And so when you're hearing these stories about mares and horses, but you're like in Morningside Heights.
Right. You know,
like the subway's down the street, you got the A train, you got, you know, Morningside Park. How is that processing in your mind?
I think it felt like this is who I am of, and this is where I'm of. Like, this is in me. I was also a kid who would go on the fire escape and try to plant tomato seeds and see if I could grow things. Who, when we would go to the park, you know, I loved rolling down the hills. I loved getting dirty. Like, I felt like I tried to get as close to this idea of land, of place, of being from somewhere that is in your blood. And so when she would tell me these stories, I think I saw it. There was less distance than I would imagine a lot of kids would have. Like, it was a collapse of, okay, yes, that is where my people come from. And when I return, I think I will know that.
So the storytelling is definitely kind of imbued in you. For you, when did it go from these incredibly colorful stories of life in the DR and memories to, I'm going to put those down into poetry?
I think it was music. My mother would tell me all these stories, and my father would play bolero.
Esta tarde vi llover.
My brothers were really big into hip-hop. It was in hip-hop that I kind of heard things that felt familiar, that felt like my neighborhood, that felt like people I knew, but told in a very particular form. And so early on, I had this neighbor that my mother would leave me with when we needed a babysitter. And I think to try to get me out of her hair, she would have me sing to her plants. And she's like, no, it's going to help them grow. Like, just go ahead and sing them songs. And I would make up all these little songs for the plants. And I would go back the next day and I would be so mad that I couldn't remember them. And I was like, one day I'm going to know how to write. And when I know how to write, I'm going to make sure that I put these words down so I can look at them the next day so I don't keep forgetting. And then I realized I didn't sing well. Like, that wasn't what my talent was. And one of my older brothers let me know, like, this might not be it. And so I began rapping at the age of, like, 10. And so while it was definitely poetry and lyrical and music, there's always been a narrative bent to what I write. There's always been a desire to include character and setting that I would say I move less into lyric than I do into narrative.
But what were you thinking in terms of when you're leaving high school and going into college? Were you already like, I'm a writer, I'm a poet? Or were you still trying to find out what you were going to do?
I knew that I wanted to perform poetry, which even at that stage in my life, I wasn't sure if I was calling myself a poet. If it still felt like poetry felt different than what I was making, that I still wanted my work to be heard. I still felt like I needed to be in the room to translate what I wrote, to have people see my body as I manifested the language. So I wanted a program where I could do theater, but also creative writing and some type of one-woman show in that capacity. And I knew that. I graduated from my undergrad with a performing arts major in 2010. And so I applied for my MFA and listen, I was very determined in that program. I was going to leave with a project. And I was writing fiction. I wrote 3 manuscripts on the side because I was in a program for poetry. So I never workshopped any of that. No one ever saw any of that work. It was just me writing on the metro to and from class and in between grading. And then I was also working on my first manuscript of poetry. And when I left the program, you know, I have these 4 projects under my belt. And so I just started shopping them around and started performing again. And thankfully, I sold my first novel a year later, but I had been touring that entire year after graduating. I was on the road doing 100 shows a year at colleges with my poems. I would get on stage and do an hour of poems every single night for, I mean, over 1/3 of the year I was on the road.
But what was the part about being on the road and performing and doing your poetry live, what was that infusing into you from, you know, when you were like writing, and now you're on stage doing your work?
I think I love the human connection, the moment where you see someone nodding or someone crying or someone laugh, right? And just that connection of, although I may have been alone when I wrote this and may have been feeling alone in the actual sentiment of the poem, like it is this moment of humanity that is the point, right? It's the acknowledgement of the wound needs a witness. And like I see yours, but also I expose myself so that you can see mine.
Afro Latina, camina conmigo. Sosa swagger anywhere she go, como la negra tiene tumbao azúcar. Dance to the rhythm, beat the drums of my skin.
And I think I loved very early on, you know, I grew up with a lot of shame, as I think a lot of young women do, and particularly if you're raised within certain religious identities that have a sense of anything you do that is about pleasure, about your body is wrong and you are bad and you are evil for that. I had so much shame. And to stand in front of audiences and stare that shame in the face and tell people, look at me.
Afro descendant, the rhythms within, the first language I spoke was Spanish. Learn from lullabies whispered in my ear. My parents' tongue was a gift which I quickly forgot after realizing my peers did not understand it. They did not understand me. So I rejected habichuela and mango, much preferring Happy Meals and Big Macs. Straightening my hair in imitation of Barbie, I was embarrassed by my grandmother's colorful skirts and my mother's ebroki ingli, which cracked my pride when she spoke.
Coming up on Latino USA with The Fire on High, we talk more about Elizabeth Acevedo's new novel. That's coming up. Stay with us. No te vayas.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Timothy Simons played Jonah Ryan on HBO's Veep, on a show known for its insults. Has anybody gotten more of them than Jonah?
If the cruelty registered, our show would be an hour and 15 minutes long, because every scene would be like, excuse me, you can't speak to me that way.
This week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Hey, we're back, and we're going to continue our conversation now with author and poet Elizabeth Acevedo. In 2018, Elizabeth released her debut young adult novel, The Poet X. The novel became a New York Times bestseller and received multiple awards, including the National Book Award. The Poet X follows Xiomara Batista, a young poet, and the novel unfolds through a series of poems written by the character. The character, Xiomara, she's quite powerful. And I'm wondering if you can read from the book, The Poet X, the poem Names.
Sure. Names. I'm the only one in the family without a biblical name. Xiomara isn't even Dominican. I know because I Googled it. It means one who is ready for war. And truth be told, that description is about right. Because I even tried to come into the world in a fighting stance, feet first. Had to be cut out of mommy after she'd given birth to my twin brother Xavier just fine. And my name labors out of some people's mouths in that same awkward and painful way until I have to slowly say, Xiomara. I've learned not to flinch the first day of school as teachers get stuck stupid trying to figure it out. Mommy says she thought it was a saint's name. Gave me this gift of battle, and now curses how well I live up to it. My parents probably wanted a girl who would sit in the pews wearing pretty florals and a soft smile. They got combat boots and a mouth that's silent until it's sharp as an island machete.
Mm. The novel, The Poet X, is about Xiomara. She's a Dominican teenager from Harlem that uses slam poetry to express herself. She feels constrained by her mom, who wants her to obey the laws of the church. So I'm kind of feeling like Elizabeth Acevedo, is it about you? I mean, it's not all about you, but is it based on your life?
I get this often. If my mother's listening, absolutely not.
I love the fact that you still feel you need to say that. Mami, no se
Mami,
trata de ti.
No eres tú, no te apures. There are things I gave to this character that are mine. This fear of being hyper-visible to the men on the block who called out to me, who made me feel like a thing, who objectified me, but also this community I loved, but also these questions that I had. But the premise of the story was very fictional. I don't know where that line is, right? That it's not thinly veiled autobiography. I did not have the relationship with my mother that this character has with her mother. I was able to ask my priest questions and I didn't get in trouble the way that she did. I was never punished how she was. So I guess I'm saying, like, I don't know, Maria, I don't know where that line goes. I think there are some things that were mine that I gave. And then there are some things that, for the sake of the story, were necessary, that I did not shy away from saying, well, that wasn't exactly true or that didn't happen to me. It was just like, no, this is a story and it's happening to her. And this is her relationship with her best friend and her brother and this boy who she likes. And so I don't know. I think some pieces are based on me and some pieces are students that I taught, are my best friends, are my cousins, are, you know, viejitas that I knew in the neighborhood. You know, it's a compilation of things and places and people.
So your newest novel is out now. It's called With the Fire on High. It's got a beautiful cover of an Afro-Latina and lots of fruit all around her hair with big hoops. But what's the story about?
This was a fun project for me. I am really interested in magical realism and how do we bring magic into fiction. And when I was teaching, I had several students who were teen mothers. And in literature for young people, you find that there are stories about whether or not young people will have a baby, right? Like there'll be those stories of, will she or won't she get an abortion? What kind of decision is she going to make? But very rarely do you find stories that are interested in what happens after that kind of decision. And what happens to parents who are young? And so for me, I was fascinated by not writing a tragedy when it came to a young mother, when it came to a teen mom. How do I give a character hope and love and a community that is holding her up, and that the one thing she is trying to conquer is her own fear that she is not allowed to follow her dreams because of a choice that she made when she was 14. And so it's the story of Imani Santiago, who is an Afro-Puerto Rican senior in high school. She lives in Philadelphia, and she wants to be a chef. And that's her connection to her lineage. That's her connection to her mother's side, who is Black American from North Carolina, and her father's side, who is Afro-Puerto Rican. And her food has magic. And so I love pitching this story as water for chocolate, but in the hood. Right? You eat something that she makes and it brings up all these feelings and all these memories and you have a sense of who she is when she is making that. And she's telling you a story through her food. But because of the circumstances that she comes from, she doesn't think she's allowed to follow this incredible talent and this gift, honestly. And so I just had a lot of fun playing around with the different constraints of what has been done within magical realism, within teen mother stories, within hood stories, and just kind of throw it all in the air and say, no, there's triumph here.
So there's a beautiful passage in the book. It's called Catharsis. And I'm wondering if you could set us up and then read that little segment.
Sure. So Imani often cooks when she is upset, and this is a way for her to get things out. And so this is just a quick passage where Imani has had something happen in school that she is trying to come to terms with but doesn't really know how to process. And so she turns to cooking as a way to kind of put her feelings somewhere, to make something beautiful out of what doesn't feel like there's a formula for or an easy recipe within her life. And so this is Catharsis. Güela comes into the kitchen and turns on the radio. The sound of Mark Anthony wailing alongside an orchestra fills the kitchen. I would wrap my soul in a bow and sell it with the quickness to be able to cook for Mark Anthony. That man can sing. Abuela pulls out the herbs that she gets directly from El Campo in Puerto Rico and sets them on the counter. The sweet-smelling hierbabuena, the Caribbean oregano. She hands me the knives before I ask for them, cleans the cutting board before I realize I need it rinsed. Some days, when my feelings are like this, like a full pot of water with the fire on high, I don't know what to cook. Plans and ideas escape my mind, and instead, I let my heart and hands take control, guided by a voice on the inside that tells me what goes where.
There's something in your work that really communicates to women, to Latinas, to Afro-Latinas, this profound sense of self-love.
I appreciate that. I hope that comes through. I don't know that there are enough stories that deal with characters like the ones I'm writing, with Afro-Latinas, with Black characters, with queer characters, with Latinas that are writing tenderly towards us, or with generosity, or with a deep sense of, like, I love you. Like, if you're reading this, like, I love you. And I hope you feel that love on this page. Even with the characters that are quote-unquote antagonists, like, I love the mother character in The Poet X, and I tried to make her as empathetic as I could. And she is a hard character. But there's so much fear there, and I look at that character and I know her. I know a mother who is afraid of the country she has moved to and does not want to lose her daughter to what she sees as all of the things that could lead her astray. And like, how could you not feel for that? And so I hope that there is a message of self-love and also like that you are loved in these pages.
So Elizabeth Acevedo, what are you working on now?
So I just turned in my third novel manuscript. It is the story of two sisters who don't know about each other. One lives in New York City, one lives in the Dominican Republic, and their father dies in a plane crash. And one of them inherits grievance money from the airline. And that's when they learn, right? Because this, all of a sudden, financial circumstances have changed with the passing of their father. And so it's this story that is very loosely based on a flight that fell in 2001 in November.
El vuelo 587.
Yes, that fell in Queens.
Flight 580. Yeah, no, I covered that story.
Right.
And this plane this morning went down in Queens, New York, just literally 2 or 3 minutes after taking off from JFK Airport near New York City.
And I was struck. I mean, I was probably in eighth grade, but I just remember that moment of, you know, this flight full of Dominicans going home and the vibration throughout the entire community in New York of everyone knew someone on that flight. And so the third novel is called Clap When You Land.
Oh, I love that title.
Very, very Latina, no? Like very.
Oh, my God. You know, I just landed last week in the DR.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we landed into Punta Cana, so, you know, it's a tourist spot. Mm-hmm. But I was like, no one's clapping.
I know. It's so sad. It's so sad. It happens less and less these days. But that's the third manuscript that was just accepted for publication. And I'm always working on a collection of poetry. So I have an adult collection that I've been trying to finalize for years now that is in the works. But I also don't know, you know, like this book was awarded so many prizes that were really exciting and at the same time make me really scared. Because it's this moment of, you know, how do you keep writing what feels really honest when folks might just want this one kind of story from you? And this thing that I wrote in secret when no one was looking for me or checking for stuff, or no one knew who I was in that capacity of a novelist, like that's never going to happen again. That now folks are comparing everything I do to a past project. And so I think I'm coming to terms.
Elizabeth Acevedo, thank you so much for joining me on Latino USA. It's been a great pleasure speaking with you.
So great talking with you, Maria. Thanks for having me.
Elizabeth Acevedo is a Dominican-American award-winning author and New York Times bestseller. Her latest novel is With the Fire on High. This episode was produced by Caroline Aguirre and edited by Fernanda Camarena. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Ka, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo, with additional editing by Marlon Bishop. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow is Jess Alvarenga. Our intern is Lucas Southard. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. And if you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. Funding for Latino USA's coverage of A Culture of Health is made possible in part by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.
Do you prefer Elizabeth or Liz?
We're friends now. You can call me Liz.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, an adoption in Alabama and what it reveals about the cracks in our legal system.
In the state of Alabama, civil court does not cover interpreters. We are not paid to go to civil court.
That's next time on Latino USA.